don't mess with the best, man, because the best don't mess.
It's time to talk.
Your thoughts.
I do genuinely think it does that with the parents.
For me, he was the bridge between myself and my untapped potential.
Flattery will get you nowhere in here.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I couldn't even answer her because, you know what, she wasn't wrong.
The voice of Cork.
9:10, good morning on this Thursday from the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Be part of the conversation on 0818 104 106 by phone or by text on 0868 104 106. You can SMS on that number. You can also add it to your WhatsApp as a Red FM text or whatever you want. And 0868 104 106 can also be your WhatsApp contact with us, including those very easy to leave voicemails. Mick Mulcahy in for the second last day. Neil Prendeville returning on Monday morning. To the headlines we go. And of course, it being forecast to possibly, not definitely, but possibly be the record setter in temperatures for Ireland. Don't go out your back and tan as we heat up. I remember during the COVID, they were saying, get out your back and tan when they were trying to keep us at home. But according to the Star today, Killjoy doctors have warned that we should stay out of the sun during the heat wave and not even think about getting a tan. Years on from the famous go out your back and tan headline when they asked us not to sunbathe in public during lockdown, they now warn any sort of tan is damage to the skin. So lather on the sunscreen as the sun is set to shine hard all week. Now, the Irish Sun has another clever heat-related headline. Ready Mercury. Red D Mercury. Ireland poised to be the hottest since 1887, baking in searing temperatures not seen in 140 years. And Met Éireann has predicted the mercury could pass a sweltering 33 degrees here today as a rare heat dome has left most of Europe like a furnace. We'll talk about weather and the heat dome a little later in the programme as well. Meanwhile, the Examiner has Ireland needing to face its fear over drugs. There's an Oireachtas committee calling for the decriminalisation of possession. We mentioned it over the last couple of days on the programme. But Cormac O'Keefe and Louise Byrne reporting that Ireland needs to take its head out of the sand about the drugs crisis and decriminalise the personal possession of drugs. This is what an Oireachtas committee has said. It's got cross-party support. The Oireachtas Drugs Committee called for the offence of possession for all drugs. I was unsure of that during the week, but now apparently it's for all drugs. Not just your softer ones, but the harder ones as well. But possession for all drugs to be removed from the statute book and no longer a crime. The committee has gone one step further than the Citizens' Assembly on Drugs Use, which said possession should still remain illegal in law, but still that a form of decriminalisation should be adopted in practice. The report of the committee, which was tasked with examining the 2024 Assembly findings and making its own recommendations, will now go to government, which must give a detailed response, and it must hold an Oireachtas debate. By the way, the high weather warning for Ireland has just been extended until Saturday. So whatever we said in the forecast about possible rain tomorrow, you might get the thunder showers, but the all-time record temperature will be challenged today. It's not a definite, but now the high weather and high temperature warning has been extended until Saturday. Why are we thinking of decriminalising heroin and cocaine is the stark headline in the Daily Mail today. A recommendation by TDs and senators to decriminalise all drugs has sparked outrage and has been branded by doctors as very dangerous as it will lead to more broken lives. More on that in the Daily Mail. Now, in the Indo, and this is strangely not making all of the papers, you can pretty much guarantee it will over the coming days and weeks. But the Taoiseach has accused Sinn Féin of engineering fuel protests as decision on excise cuts looms. The government is to make a call on extending temporary cut on diesel and petrol beyond July. Didn't they vote on that last night? The government has some distance to go before the end of July as a decision looms on whether to extend the temporary excise cuts on petrol and diesel. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has said as he accused Sinn Féin of trying to engineer protests over fuel costs. There were testy exchanges in the Dáil today. Sinn Féin finance spokesperson Pierce Doherty accused the coalition of refusing to listen to ordinary people after they rose up in protest earlier this year during the nationwide fuel protest. Mr. Doherty hit out after the passage of the finance bill in the Dáil last week, which Mr. Doherty said would increase petrol and diesel prices from August the 1st. And we'll talk about that a little more on the programme as well. But if it does come to be, Then we're looking at diesel and petrol going. I'm not sure which is which. One is 27 cent per litre, and one is 32 cent per litre. This is Piers Doherty in the Doyle over the last few days.
Putting up the price of diesel by 32 cent in the matter of a number of weeks is reckless. You accuse me of games. This is nothing to do with games, Tisha. How dare you? When I give voice to the concerns of people right across the state that tell me that the idea that this government is putting up the price of petrol and diesel, which you voted for, putting up the price of diesel by 32 cent in the matter of a number of weeks is reckless. You accuse me of games. This is nothing to do with games, Tisha. How dare you? When I give voice to the concerns of people right across the state that tell me that the idea that this government is putting up the price of petrol and diesel, which you voted for last week, that's not a game for them. When people tell me they don't have enough money in their pockets to pay for the bare necessities in this Ireland of 2026, that's not a game for them. I'm doing my job when I stand up and represent the people right across the state who are pushed to the pin of the collar because of decisions that you made. Now, the finance bill has passed the Dáil. The legislation has passed the Dáil. And on the 1st of August, these prices are to increase. Last week, I put forward an amendment here that would see those increases not taking effect. It will put huge pressure on ordinary families. I've asked you, will you bring forward a financial resolution without delay, or are you going to stick to where your position is so that these increases go ahead?
And we'll talk to Donal O'Leary of Sinn Féin later on, a little later on in the programme. But more price pressures. Irish Independent main headline is more food price hikes in the months ahead, warns the ESRI, and the petrol and diesel price will be intrinsic in causing this, I reckon, if they are to pass. But food prices are likely to continue rising in the coming months due to the delayed effects of the Iran war, the ESRI has warned. While there's been an inflation shock from the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, it was mostly limited to oil and gas. But the ESRI predicts the cost of food is likely to increase towards winter because of the impact of the war in the Middle East on food prices. It's yet to be felt in Ireland, but as they say, it's in the post. The Echo now, and Ukrainians are in, quote, awful limbo, unquote, at Trebolgan. More than 500 Ukrainian residents living in the former Trebolgan holiday village have been told they will soon have to leave the East Cork facility that they have been calling home. And some of those young children, husbands, wives, families are pictured in the Echo. The residents of Trebolgan, now one of the largest accommodation locations for Ukrainians in the state, include 167 children, 74 pensioners and 10 disabled people. While no formal date has been given for when they have to leave, communication from Trebolgan management on behalf of the government has told residents that state accommodation for Ukrainians will begin winding down in the coming weeks. McGregor TV backlash making the red tops today. Several of them, including The Mirror, saying, "We stand with Nikita." Singer Pink has come out and is among the stars to hit out at an appearance by Conor McGregor on The Jimmy Fallon Show. Nikita Hand has thanked Singer Pink after she criticised Conor McGregor's appearance on Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show in the US. He was found by a civil jury to be liable for the rape of Ms. Hand. He was on the talk show last week. And the move has now been criticised by singer-songwriter Pink, who took to social media and posted a picture of Nikita alongside an image of the fighter on the hit chat show. Her post was accompanied by the words, "You ask why women don't report rape? They do. But men still get platforms and are treated like celebrities." That's making many of the morning papers today. Back to the Examiner and a law to ban flavoured vapes as steps move even closer on this. Paul Hosford is reporting that a law which will see a ban on flavoured vapes and which limits the colours used in packaging has moved a step closer as it passed through the Dáil. The Public Health Tobacco Products and Nicotine Inhaling Products Amendment Bill 2026, that's a handful, passed final stage in the Dáil and will be sent to the Seanad, where it will be debated in July. The government will receive EU notification in the coming weeks on whether the bill can be enacted before the summer recess. I had occasion to be having a lemonade in a seaside pub yesterday evening at about 6 o'clock, and I must have seen about 100 youngsters, all for sure under 18, maybe around the 16, I'm not going to mention the area or the pub, all around the 16 years of age, I would imagine, and many of them were vaping, passing vapes around as they waited for bus transport home. Now, bus transport passed with a full sign on it. Also, from the few seconds I saw it passing, the full bus was full of young kids as well, or young adults, I suppose, in the 15 or 16 age group, all heading back from various beaches. But eventually a bus came along and they all got home safely. I'm not saying there was any trouble. There wasn't. They were all scantily clad, especially the lads who seemed to think that going around barefoot and just wearing a pair of swimming trunks is the fashion of the day. Some of them badly sunburned, all very orderly, but a lot of them smoking vapes, if a sample of one of that is anything to go by. Now, we got an ex-chusif. Ex-chusif. Get it? A mum who could eat only potatoes for 40 years has been cured by hypnosis. Rachel Hall said she would gag if she even tried to eat vegetables or fruit. She's 42 years old and claimed the only food she could stomach since age 2 was the humble spud. Now, she has many options here, of course. She could have it chips, she could have it as roasted, she could have it as jacket potatoes, maybe gratin potatoes, or as mash, creamy, buttery mash. She's a mum of 2 and she said, "It wasn't so much that I love potatoes. In fact, I found them quite dull. It was more a phobia about almost every other type of food, and I had a high gag reflex which made it almost impossible to swallow new foods. Potatoes are boring and bland. The idea of flavour or spice really scared me." But now she's been cured when she was told she had high cholesterol because she's eaten potatoes and chips for so long. She had to take action. So she's been cured by a hypnotherapist, and after 8 sessions, she's now eating fruit, veg and healthy chicken casserole for the first time. The other day I had my first egg and cress sandwich after 40 years eating potatoes, and it was absolutely delicious. Now, I know we use here on the programme now and again Paul Hunter, the renowned corp hypnotist and hypnotherapist. Her hypnotherapist was called David. He runs clinics in the UK, but very successful. She only ate spuds for 40 years. Lots to do in the programme today. We have some birthday mentions, we have summer pass mentions, we have lots of guests and people coming on, and we'll get to the business of the programme in a couple of moments' time. Right now it's coming up on 22 minutes past 9.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Morning from the Neil Prendeville Show at 26 minutes past 9. We call him when it's freezing. We call him when there's torrential rain. And we're calling him now when it's absolutely baking down with sun. A very popular man at the moment on the airwaves is Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather. Morning, Alan.
Good morning.
You must be very busy doing lots of interviews everywhere, are you?
Busy morning, yeah, busy. But it's good to be talking about good weather rather than
the other side of it. Yeah. What's the cause of this? We've all heard of the heat dome. How is that formed? Is it something coming up from the Sahara Desert?
It is pretty much, yeah. It's coming up from North Africa, Spain, and it's a heat dome is when basically the heat sits there and is very slow to move. So it's an area of high pressure that has been sitting over central to Western Europe, and then we have low pressure out to the west. And that's steering the warmest of that air up over Ireland today for kind of a fairly brief enough in terms of the actual intensity of it. But it is bringing the really warm, hot air right over Ireland today.
And do you think we've become more sensitized to hot weather? There's lots of media. I won't call it hype because it's coming from a genuine place of care. But I remember, for instance, as a young fellow being in Dorset in Weymouth in 1976, it was the hottest summer on record there, to my knowledge. And we were with camping with the scouts, right? There was nary a mention of, we're roasting again today, lads. I don't think there was even suntan lotion. We just got on with it. Now we get the temperatures that, were passé in the 70s or didn't deserve media attention. And now it's almost full-blown panic in the media.
Well, the media do like to hype any story, to be honest with you. But, you know, at the same time, you have to be conscious of the fact that it hit 36.1 degrees in England yesterday, which breaks 1976. And, you know, that's the difference now. The temperatures are just that little bit higher with climate change. So, you know, and to be honest with you, we're very lucky in Ireland and even in parts of the UK that we're escaping the real heat, and we will escape the real heat. I mean, to hit 44 degrees in north of France, you know, you would expect that maybe in some parts of central Spain, you know, you would kind of take that. But that's why, sadly, so many people are losing their lives in France, because this type of heat is a notch up on what you would have seen. So you're right. I mean, I remember summers in the 90s where you would have a lot of sunny, you know, days, warm days. But this type of intense heat that we're going to see today, that, you know, France has been seeing for the last few days and we'll see for a few more, is unfortunately a notch up on what you would have experienced in 1976.
And how are things on the south of Spain?
Spain, in South Spain, is actually not as hot. I mean, it's still in the 30s, but, you know, where a lot of people would head on holidays, you know, around the Marbella, Termolinas, those type of areas, they haven't seen the crazy high temperatures. To be honest with you, France is really the biggest story because it's so far above normal. As I say, 40 degrees in Spain, it happens. It doesn't happen that often. And it did happen a lot earlier this year and last year than normal, because a lot of people, like, I have a follower on Instagram who's been living in Spain for 40 years. And the thing that he keeps saying to me is it's happening earlier and earlier every year. He said, like, this in July, you would think, okay, that's fine, we get hot weather in July, but it's happening earlier and earlier. But the France is really where the extreme, you know, the difference is. I mean, 44 degrees in France is just, in June, is unheard of.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are the naysayers on climate change, Alan, as a professional who works in it, you know, for those who say it's just a way of generating more carbon tax, what's your genuine feeling on the track the planet is taking? Is it a natural cycle, or are we accelerating ourselves to being roasted?
Well, I kind of stick to the debate of the climate is changing. You can argue over there why the climate is changing. You know, that's, people will argue about cycles and sun cycles and lots of different things that can influence it. But there's no doubt that the climate is changing, and we're seeing more extreme, you know, rainfall events, and people of Cork know those only too well from Babette and things like that. But the climate is definitely changing. As I say, we're very, very lucky in Ireland to be positioned where we are. And I've been saying for a few years, and some people have laughed at me, and maybe they won't be laughing as much, that we are going to become a destination in terms of people of Europe escaping the heat in summers, because people will be looking to see where they can go to get away from the type of heat that's in France at the moment. So we're very lucky in that way.
It won't just be the Nordic countries then. We'll be the cool-cation capital, will we?
Well, we certainly will be a lot cooler than most of those areas. And, you know, like when you're on the coast in Ireland, the water is certainly a lot cooler. So if you head to a coast in Ireland, for many people, that will be much, much more like heaven rather than the 44 degrees or even 40 degrees. But yeah, there's no denying climate is changing. As I say, you can argue about why it's changing, but it is certainly changing.
Okay, people have very short memories, of course. They forget already when the sun comes out that we had the most miserable, wet and cold and blustery June so far.
We did have a very wet June. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the rainfall stats show that you know, June has been very, very wet. Temperature-wise, again, a lot of people, you know, would think, oh, it was colder than average. But the nights, because of that cloud, means that the average temperature is higher. And that's what a lot of, most of the stats show, that, you know, you use the average temperature rather than, you know, the maximum high temperatures or the number of days above, you know, the normal temperature. I mean, in some parts, the average temperature is only a little bit above normal, but the rainfall is well above normal. I mean, Cork Airport has already seen 95 millimetres of rain for June, with the average is 83. So there's no doubt it was a very wet first half and a little bit more of June.
Okay, we've just had an extension officially of the heat warning into Saturday, meant to end tomorrow, now extended into Saturday. How does heat events, anomalies like this heat dome, how do they normally pass by and finish up? There's a lot of heat in the air, a lot of moisture in the air. Are we likely to get very, very heavy downpours?
We are. We're likely to see a risk of some very severe thunderstorms. Now, the risk is further north, especially tonight, this evening tonight and into early tomorrow. But you could see some thunderstorms even in Cork and in the south in general tomorrow morning, because, as you say, a lot of moisture and a lot of heat in the atmosphere. So generally when we get these heat extremes, they do break down with thunderstorms. I mean, some of the weather charts are showing really exceptional thunderstorms for parts of the northwest, with a risk of hail of up to 5 centimetres or even over 5 centimetres, which is something you would see a lot in around the Lake Garda region of Italy, but very, very rarely in this part of the world.
Okay, and if we do break the record today, it'll probably be somewhere midlands to west, will it?
Probably around the Midwest, around the Athenry, Castlebar, that type of area. But there has been some cloud there this morning and even some showers in the west, so that could cap it a little bit. But, I mean, Valencia was up to 26 degrees in Kerry at 9 a.m. Now, if anybody thinks that's normal for June, their memory is something wrong with it.
Of course, like we've passed the summer solstice. The evenings are drawing in, as they say. You know, slowly but surely we'd be heading back into the season of autumn. Do we typically get higher temperatures in May or June or in July and August?
No, July and August are typically our warmest 2 months. So typically the average temperature in July and August will be the warmest 2 months. So if we were to see this type of air mass in another, say, 3 or 4 weeks, you will be up another notch again. And there is always a chance that we'll see another blast of hot air moving up towards us. But yeah, it is unusual to get, I mean, you can, the record from 1887 dates back to the 26th of June. So that just shows you can get hot spells in June. But generally July would be kind of our warmest month into early August.
Finally, Alan, I know it's probably not your area per se. You're a weather forecaster and a weather observer as such. Advice for people heading out today, are people motoring or people intending to line the sun UV-wise? Is there anything you might advise?
The main thing for me is the people that can do that, they're fine. It's the vulnerable people that can't easily move, can't easily get a fan, get water for themselves. They're the people that really you need to look after. And the pets, don't forget about the pets, because they need shade and they need water too. And especially with the risk of thunderstorms, every time there's thunderstorms, I get lots of reports of dogs that have gone missing because they get frightened. So just look after those that can't look after themselves, really, actually.
Okay. Thanks a million. Alan O'Reilly, as always, from Carlow Weather. Lovely to talk to you again.
Cheers.
Cheers. All the best. Now, Kelly Murphy from Red FM News went to the Dock Beach in Kinsale yesterday. One of my favourite spots, the Dock Bar there, the Pod, some of the best food there at the weekends. And of course, there are many, many families soaking up the sunshine as the cars snake their way, parked all the way up to the bridge over the river. So it's a very, very popular area. Alfie Williams from Tony Bell Ices has said, that queues have been constant with customers looking to cool down with an ice cream. Alfie's a legend, actually. I speak to Alfie quite a bit down there, and I think he's been there in that spot for about 25 years, and a lovely guy with it as well. But how are things in the sun yesterday? Here's Kelly Murphy's Vox from the Dock Beach.
Weather's gorgeous. We're in Kinsale heading to the Dock Beach, and we're on day off. And it's beautiful.
How good is it to have it here? And you're praying it's going to stay till the end of the week?
Yeah, it's really gorgeous and we love it. And we live locally, so we really do appreciate it. And we come here as much as we can.
Yeah, no, we do live locally. We grew up here and it's really nice, close to Kinsale and close to the Dock Bar as well, which is handy.
How have you been enjoying the weather? What have you been getting up to?
Going swimming, out for walks and having drinks and food in the sun is really nice. Feel like we're out faring.
And what's the plan for the weekend? Kind of praying it stays.
Praying it stays and enjoying the sun while we're off, I guess, yeah.
We're actually here from Sydney. Came back to visit family with our two little girls. So we're delighted with the weather because it's the winter over here, over there. So we're kind of getting two summers, really. So there wasn't too much of a culture shock when we came over with the lovely weather. So we're delighted. We kind of brought it with us. We're here for 2.5 weeks. It's actually my husband's friend, Kennelly. Congratulations, Canadian Orla. They're getting married in a few weeks. Exactly, exactly. We're delighted. We weren't expecting much, but we're delighted with the weather, yeah.
Amazing.
Thrilled.
Tell me, what's the plan for the beach day?
What's the plan for the beach day?
Yeah, swimming, sandcastles, that kind of thing.
Swimming, sandcastles, in and out of the water, and hopefully the kids have a good time.
Ice creams, chips, what plan for us?
Oh, definitely ice cream and chips.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Can't beat the Irish food.
Too right, yeah.
Alfie, tell me, what's it been like yesterday? What's it like today?
It's quite at the moment out today, but yesterday was just mayhem. It was very busy, you know, so we're expecting a busy day today.
What are people buying?
The Tradition 99 and Oreo Sundays and all the Sunday cups. Good.
How are you dealing with the mayhem?
Yeah, we're just one at a time, you know, just keep going and keep them coming.
What's your favourite bit about when the weather kind of peaks up? Do you know business is going to be good?
We do, but it's long days, long I have work, you know, long days. They still come here at 7 o'clock in the evening.
And what are they saying when they come to you? They're just looking to kind of cool down, get something nice?
Yeah, they look for a bottle of water and they look at the menu and see what suits them. There's something for everybody, you know.
Tell me about your plan for the rest of the week and how you hope the weather might stay.
Once it stays up over 19, 20 degrees, we kind of be here most days, you know. So all depends on the weather, one day at a time.
A legend that is Alfie Williams from Tony Bell Ices there at the dockside for at least 25 years, maybe even longer. 22 minutes to 10 now when an Ireland Miss Universe finalist says becoming homeless can happen to anyone. Homeless And I'm proof of that. She's worth talking to, and we'll do that next.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
18 minutes to 10. Good morning. This is Mick Mulcahy on the Neil Prendeville Show. And yesterday we spoke to an incredible Cork mum, Lizanne Carney, who has terminal stage 4 cancer. She is only 41 years of age and is powering through despite her diagnosis, and such an inspirational lady. We've texts and stuff to get to on Lizanne a little later on. But from homeless to pageant queen, a lot to get through with our next guest, Lydia O'Keefe. Good morning, Lydia.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Now, you took part in the Miss Universe Ireland pageant at the weekend, the final, so congrats on that. It went to a Limerick girl, I think, did it?
Dublin.
Dublin, was it? Okay.
Sorry, she won from Limerick 18, yeah.
Okay. But we're here to talk about that and much more, including homelessness. Yeah. You experienced homelessness at a very young age, 21, and you were expecting a baby at the time. Can you tell us the story?
Yeah, so while I was expecting my daughter, Aria, I had to leave the property I was staying in. And I had nowhere else to go, and the rent is obviously a crazy amount in Ireland, and it's impossible to get a mortgage. People my age are actually leaving the country over it. So I had no choice but to go into the accommodation.
What forced this move? Was it a landlord selling up?
Yeah. And then I had to go into accommodation, and I was there until my daughter was one. So it was a long journey in there.
And did you have much notice about vacating the property? Did you have to maybe couch surf or stay with family and pose on friends for accommodation?
Yeah. I couch surfed for a while until I was about, I'd say, 15, 20 weeks pregnant. And ultimately, I needed a place for me and my daughter. There was no room in family or friends' homes.
Okay.
And I had to go into accommodation.
And what do you mean, in a refuge or something?
So I went into Coonley Refuge in County Cork, and they helped me with everything, and they helped me fight the council. So the council were very hard to deal with, so Coonley helped me with that.
Okay.
And they're in County Cork.
And did you eventually find a place and begin to rebuild with your new baby?
Yeah, so I was moved in with the council, so they moved me to Middleton Airbnb, but that was very, very hard. And the council first wanted to send me very far away, and I don't drive, so I had to actually argue with the council for a very long time to get to property I'm in now, in Carrigaline, in my hometown. But it was a very hard, long route. Like, it was very hard to go through postpartum and with a newborn. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Do you think that's prevalent across the spectrum of people who are sadly homeless in the country, that they're fighting untold mental health and stability issues with what they're going through?
Yeah, it is very, very hard. And especially if you're putting a B&B, there's one kitchen between, it could be 20, 30 people. So even finding time to make breakfast, lunch or dinner is hard. And then they're fighting the mental toll. And they're getting up in the morning, leaving that property and going to work and acting like everything's normal. And then they're coming back distraught. And to see people every day you're living with fight that hard and their mental health be torn apart, it was very hard. And I knew when I was in that situation, I would tell my story. And I knew I would do that, and I knew I would get through it. But it was hard, and there is people that don't get through it, unfortunately. So with my platform and pageantry, I am going to advocate as much as I can about the crisis.
Okay, let's touch on the pageantry side of it, because it's often seen as, it could be more on the beauty side rather than on mental health or mental strength. But I think pageants these days have matured, if that's the correct word, into being oftentimes an empowering place for young women to get their voices heard. Would that be correct?
Yeah, no, it takes months of preparation. I mean, physical training, I mean, you're learning how to do interviews, so how to be interviewed, and you could be asked any question regarding politics, and you have to answer those questions. So it's a lot of mental and physical training, but it is the best thing I've ever done, and it really empowers women. I mean, all of us girls, we trained for months, and we came together, and we were just so happy to be on that stage, and I'd 100% be doing it next year. But in the meantime, I will be doing other pageants. I'm currently Lady of Cork, and I'll be competing in October for Lady of Ireland. So I will keep going.
Okay, and in that homeless time when you were sharing facilities, was it very difficult to have a new baby with the hygiene and sterilisation needs?
Yeah, it was. I continuously made reports to the council. I said, these accommodations are not suitable for babies and newborns or children in general. Like, some of them are filthy. Like, there, no children should be in there. And the council were impossible to deal with, and they were really, really mean. I mean, some of the people you dealt with were so cruel, and they made you feel ashamed that you were coming to them to help. So I found that it made my postpartum mental health a lot worse.
Mm.
And it's almost like you should not talk about it. You should be embarrassed when you shouldn't be. It can happen to anyone. And I never thought it would happen to me, but it did.
Okay, you never thought it would happen to you. What other types of people did you meet who were made homeless? Did you meet professionals?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I met actually a doctor inside there. I met previous lawyers. Like, just all different backgrounds. And it was kind of more of situations where the landlord was giving up the house.
People would wonder, how would a doctor or a lawyer become homeless when they're in pretty healthy professions?
Yeah, because I think there was one case where the landlord gave up the property and they had no choice. They had nowhere else to go or no family to stay with, and they had to go into accommodation. So, and with the prices of everything in Ireland, they're making it impossible. Even doctors, even people with good professions, cannot afford the rent and bills and everything on top of it. The prices are gone crazy. And I know people I went to school with and my age are actually after leaving the country because they can't afford to get a property in Ireland.
Yeah, I lived through the great exodus in the 80s when the plane or the train to the UK, you know, you go to Australia, you go to America and try to begin a new life. It was prevalent across all society in Ireland in the recession in the 80s. Now there's and I don't mean to be flippant about it, there's a bit more glass on it because people go, you know, for a 2-year sabbatical, if you like, or they get a job in Canada or in America or Australia, and they treat it as part of growing up, really. I want to do my travel. I want to head off and pick fruit in Australia and work in the bars and backpack and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, it was the dire need to find employment.
Yeah.
But I think maybe a lot of them are staying away now when they see, number one, the money they can earn, number two, the lifestyle they can have, number three, that they can buy a property.
Yes, I feel like a lot of people, they plan to go away and save for a couple of years and come back. But once they're over there, they stay. And the way it's going, a lot more people are going to start leaving because they're making it impossible to live in this country. And people are fighting every day to keep a roof over their heads.
What supports are there for supporting homeless women and children?
Sorry, say that again, please.
What supports exist for supporting homeless women and children?
Well, I had huge support from Cooney Refuge. But other than that, I didn't receive any like mental health support once I was changed to the council. I didn't receive any support at all from any like committees or anything like that. I was just in there by myself. I did have support obviously from my family and friends and things like that, but they don't give you any like mental health support or anything. The council don't provide nothing, and I think they should, because people's mental health in those situations deteriorates, and they're living a nightmare every day that they want to get out of. And when I went through the situation, I mean, I think it was the lowest I ever was in my whole life. So now I'm just really, really trying to raise awareness and make my story get out there.
And what gave you the strength and what made you decide to speak out?
Well, so I took the last year to kind of recover my own mental health. But I had this urge inside me that I needed to speak out. And I kind of knew I was going to do that. I don't know what gave me the strength, but I'd say my daughter.
Your daughter, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, because as she gets older, I wouldn't want that to ever happen to anyone her age, you know, when they get older. So something needs to change so the upcoming generation don't have to go through this.
Now, I know you've raised money for the refuge that helped you, but you've a greater ambition and long-term goal is to start a charity supporting homeless women and children. Where can people connect with you online if they wish to get involved and wish to assist?
So my goal, I'm currently working on opening up my own charity and help for mental support for the homeless crisis and financial. So whether it's buying a buggy for someone or getting food vouchers, anything I can help their situation with. So if anyone would like to contact me, I'm on TikTok, on Instagram, and it's Lydia O'Keefe. And any donations or support would be amazing. If anyone would like to support, it would be fantastic.
How old is Aria now?
She's 2.5. She was actually born Christmas Day. So she's a special baby.
She's 2.5 today then?
Yeah, she's 2.5 now.
We are 6 months from Christmas today.
I know. Oh, it's crazy how the air flies.
Lydia, it's lovely to talk to you, and I know you're going to be a great role model and a great mum for Aria. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you.
I think the stark thing is here. People don't realise that pageants can be helpful and empower women. The other side of it, the other side of it, completely different, is you've met doctors and lawyers, solicitors who've lost their accommodation because of landlords selling up. Aria must be asleep. Is she? Or else she's very quiet.
She's actually eating pizza right now.
All right. Thanks, Lydia.
Thanks so much. I will be competing in October for Lady of Ireland, so watch out for that as well.
Lady of Ireland, what competition is that?
So it's in Northern Ireland, but I'm currently Lady of Cork. So I'll be competing for hopefully the title of Lady of Ireland in October.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lydia. Lydia O'Keefe in Carrigaline. You can check her out Instagram and TikTok. Thanks. Thanks, Lydia.
Bye.
Now, I want to get to a text we got yesterday on Lizanne with her stage 4 cancer. Hi, Mick. My daughter found a lump in her breast. We were told it wasn't urgent and faced a 4 to 6 month wait. We went to England instead and paid €301 for a scan of the lump and her lymph nodes for peace of mind. The GP tried to talk me out of it, saying that if anything was found, Ireland could refuse to treat her. Imagine hearing that. How could Ireland refuse to treat her if you get a scan somewhere else? Get the information yourself. It's almost as if you're not entitled to get your own imaging. But imagine hearing that. We went anyway. When it comes to my daughter's health, I won't be threatened into doing nothing. And we were talking to a guy called Brian yesterday. Remember the guy who said if he became an airline pilot, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to France, or could be Kerry, I'm not sure. He said his eyesight wasn't good enough to be an airline pilot. Tell that lad, Brian, make there's another treatment where they replace the lenses in your eyes. My brother wasn't suitable for laser surgery, but he got lens replacement treatment instead. He said it's the best thing he ever did. And unlike laser treatment, it won't deteriorate over time. And if you want to get in touch with the programme, you can do so by telephone 0818 104 106 or indeed on the WhatsApp at 0868 104 106. We spoke about a lost wedding ring yesterday in Inchidani. I wonder, is there any progress on that with the metal detector? The lost wedding ring reminds me of something. A few years ago, a billionaire was skiing in Aspen, says this texter, when he lost his car keys on the slope in the snow. He waited until the slopes were closed and then brought in a helicopter equipped with one of those huge metal magnets you would see in a scrapyard. He had the pilot fly over the slopes and up popped his car keys, says Desi. Nice if you have the money, I guess.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And as we give away our summer series of family passes for great Cork attractions, Here's a very nice one. Family pass today for Blarney Castle. We'll give it away towards the end of the programme, inviting you to discover the magic of Blarney Castle, one of Ireland's most iconic landmarks, of course, one of the biggest tourist spots and destinations in the country as well. You can climb the historic castle tower and you can kiss the legendary Blarney Stone to receive the famous gift of the gab, the power of eloquence and charm. A lot of Irish families haven't actually done this or have never been inside Blarney Castle, so you might like to win this. After exploring the castle, gardens and grounds, you can visit the castle's restaurant and cafe, get some pictures taken if you want, surrounded by the beauty and history of this world-famous attraction. You can check it all out at www.blarneycastle.ie. So a family pass to be given away today for Blarney Castle. CJ's on line one. Hiya, CJ.
Hi, Mick. How are you?
Good. CJ Palmer, you are aware an apprentice and you'd like to speak about your electrical apprenticeship. How did it go?
It was very good up until, I suppose, about May last year. And then there was a few things just building up until then. So I suppose I was doing my exterior cleaning business kind of on the side, just building up regular clients and stuff while I was doing it. But yeah, no, it was just an overall kind of good experience, but there's a few bad things that
okay,
happened.
Okay, what's the lot of an apprentice at the moment? Now, you know, essentially you're trading a college, an expensive college education, for a low wage while gaining experience in the real life trades, as where the physical trades of construction or electrical or plumbing and that kind of thing. And you're expected to, because you're receiving the education, take smaller wages, often that may be difficult to live on, but you're gaining that knowledge and that you know, that customer service ability in the trades that you can have pretty much steady employment for the rest of your life. Would that be a fair analogy?
Oh, certainly, yes. There's no doubt that there's no shortage of work there, but it's, you know, you're living off kind of peanuts for your first year or two, and then it kind of gets better as you go on. But
so are most apprentices supported by parents?
I suppose I'm not too sure about that. I wasn't really that supported, you know. I was living out of home and stuff like that, so it wasn't I wasn't really supported by my parents, but there's probably parents out there that do support them. But yeah, no, it's tough money, but like I said, as you said there, you're getting a good trade, you eventually build up to good money, but I do think they should increase the wages on it.
Okay, so you indicated you had a pretty good time except for a few bumps in the highway. What are the negatives of the apprentice scheme? Were you in the scheme?
I was, yeah. So basically, I started when I was 16, when COVID hit, with an electrician in Ballincollig, and he was very good. It was more just for experience, really. And I started out with him. He said he could give me an apprenticeship, but he advised me to finish the Leaving Cert. So I went and finished my Leaving Cert. And then I had one or two jobs after my Leaving Cert, and then I went back into electrical. Now, there was two electrical places that I went to, and they never signed me up to the programme.
Okay, let's keep their names out of it for legal reasons, okay?
Yeah. Look, I didn't want to mention any names anyway, but yeah, nowadays, never signed me up. It was months gone by, I was saying, am I going to get signed up, or, you know, what's going on, or whatever. And then they kept saying, oh, give it another week or so, kind of that thing. And then eventually I got fed up.
Yeah, so they're stringing you along anyway.
Yeah.
In that sense, are apprentices used for cheap labour then?
There's good companies and there's bad companies. I would advise people to do their research on companies before they step foot in the door, you know. And then there's also apprentices that just are in it for the sake of it, you know, like parents telling them, oh, electrical is the best trade, or plumbing, or, you know, that kind of thing as well. So it just, there's people that are not interested, and then there's people genuinely wanting to learn, but they're being messed around as well. So,
okay, so I'm getting the impression you didn't finish the full apprenticeship tenure. You didn't see it through.
No, what I did was I went to phase two last May, and I was in college up until December, and basically when I went in, I was told by employees in my company that I wasn't being brought back, not by my employer directly. So it was very disheartening, to be honest, and like I worked hard. You know, before I went to phase two, like it was just, I was just constantly cleaning, like I wasn't building up the tools to go in there with experience, you know, like going into, you kind of learn what you need to know for going into phase two, but it wasn't the case for me. I was just constantly told to go cleaning, this, that and the other. It was just like I was there for labour, you know?
Yeah. So how far would you be now from being a certified electrician?
I would have been about a year and a half, 2 years away, I'd say.
Is it worth finding another company and finishing that?
When I was in college, I lost all motivation because of things that happened. I don't know how you describe it, you know, like very disheartening almost that I lost all interest, and then I wasn't going into college because I felt like, you know, what's the point anymore? I was emailing my teacher saying, I can't, you know, I just don't know, am I going to continue this? And he said, look, come in and we'll have a chat. Had multiple chats with the training advisor and everything. They're like, you know, we can find you somewhere. I did one or two weekends with two different companies, and I just said, you know, this just isn't for me anymore, you know. So,
okay. A lot of people believe in destiny and that your future is kind of preordained. That fork in the road, you know, it gave you some experience, but it set you on a different path.
Exactly, yeah. It's like I learned a lot from it.
How old are you?
I'm 22, Mick.
You're a young man.
Yeah.
So you started a new business. Were you 22 at that, or were you 21 or 20 or what?
I was just gone 22. 21, sorry. So I started building up clients just around my estate. I was learning off one of my best friend's fathers in the exterior cleaning industry, just power washing, window cleaning, fascia soffits, gutters and all that. It just kind of picked off from there, really. Did a bit of door knocking around the estate, got a few small jobs, and then it was just kind of word of mouth and posting on social media and stuff.
Yeah, word of mouth is the big thing. So do you have all these big, long extensions for first and second floor window cleaning, or maybe cleaning roof tiles and fascias and soffits?
Yeah. So it's a telescopic brush. You can get them in 30 foot, 50 foot, 80 foot.
80 feet.
They are quite expensive.
I can imagine, but I imagine they pay for themselves as well, because, you know, if you've got a 3 or 4 story office building or something, you're not going to hang a guy off the roof without great expense. So why not do it from the ground? And I guess you use ladders and platforms and all that kind of thing as well, do you?
I wouldn't necessarily use ladders, as they're kind of not that safe. So I try to do most of my work from the ground, just using the telescopic brushes, gutter vac systems. Then it's just power washing is from the floor. Then soft washing walls is with the telescopic brush as well, and stuff like that. So I try to minimise ladders.
There's a Polish guy, very, very popular with people in the city. I won't mention his name because I don't want to turn it into an advert against you. But I see him in many, many places, and he's worked in our house one or two times, so I know he's Polish. But he's got the van fully decked out with the advertising. He's got the ladders on the roof. He's got the water reservoir in the back of the car or the back of the van. Whatever cleaning chemicals or whatever that you need to do the jobs. And he seems to be run off his feet.
I know, yeah. It's a great business to get into if you can get it going. I was doing it with my best friend's father, as I said. And he just said to me, look, you're well able to do it yourself. He was like, why don't you go around the estate? And this is while I was doing the electrical. And he said, just a few side jobs, you know, and stuff like that. And I kind of started to enjoy it. And when that all that stuff was happening with the electrical, I said, what can I actually do? And I was just down the dumps, really, about it. And then I said, you know what, I'll give it a shot. And it just kind of escalated from there, really.
And outside of the financially, is it mentally rewarding that you've... this is your little acorn that you want to grow into an oak tree, and you're doing it all yourself and responsible for it yourself.
Yeah, so I kind of want to just stick to myself now, maybe have hire one or two people with me. Nothing too big, just kind of stick to myself, I suppose, and just so it's rewarding for myself as well that, you know, I started it all, and, you know, I suppose it'd be rewarding in the long run that I said, you know, I took the risk and...
Well, we're always happy to help out a young entrepreneur from Cork on the Neil Prendeville Show. So, CJ Palmer, what's the name of your company or your sole tradership? And tell me, what can you clean?
So, my company is Prime Washing Services. I'm located in Ballincollig, and I do power washing, window cleaning, facial soffit cleaning, gutter emptying, soft washing, and a bit of garden maintenance here and there. It just depends how big of a job it is.
How do you gutter clear without a ladder?
So I use a gutter vac system, and if it's low down, I might just use a small little step ladder, but the gutter vac systems are very good. So,
and I guess investing in equipment is an ongoing thing, but how much did all the gear cost you?
I'd say at least $5,000 minimum, I'd say.
Okay. Stay with me a second. I want to bring Morris in here. Hang on there, CJ. Morris, morning to you.
Hi, Mick. How are things, boy? Yeah.
Very good. Apprenticeships.
Yeah, very. Apprenticeships, yeah. Yeah. I was listening with Jim yesterday. I know you've this lad on this morning, and you've had Neil's had lots of people on down through the years. They don't know what the difficulties of doing an apprenticeship financially, etc., you know?
Yeah.
And... I think Jim is right. Like, that system is outmoded. Like, it's from the 60s or the 70s. And, what it is the trade is determining who's coming into it. Like, if you're a tradesman, it's up to you who you're getting as an apprentice. I mean, this should be a path that kids could follow after their junior cert, you know? You have TY, you're there in school. I think it's a waste of a year. They seem to be doing very little and going on a holiday, you know, or maybe two holidays, you know. So
are you suggesting that instead of TY, your students would have the option to begin an apprenticeship and see what they think?
Yes, maybe, yeah. Look, you there's a work experience element, RHI, you could probably blend it in with that, but the TY were out there, I think it was about the Teachers Union of Ireland, I think it was about 12, 13 years ago, they were lobbying government at the time. And they wanted to bring in a course in the school, pre-apprenticeship type of course, where they could, you know, educate the kids and whatever, and bring them to a standard. Because, you know, I think the way it works now, it's the minimum requirement to enter that is a leaving cert, you know, for anyone to be considered for an apprenticeship. At that stage, the kids are 18 or 19, right? Yeah. And they're getting itchy. And that's competing with college then as well, you know, there's someone going to college and... And the thing there is they're looking around, can they get money? Like, there could be civil service jobs, it could be, I don't know, jobs in factories, you know, that are better paid at the point of entry. You know, also, you have a situation where adults, like, you might have lads there in their 20s and 30s who came out of school and went off working someplace, right? And then decided later in life, they said, I'd love to have done a trade, you know? And there's no way back then for them, like, and I often thought, like, there should be some assistance. Like, we're crying out as a country now for tradespeople, right? We can't get them. Jim was explaining it to you yesterday, right? We can't get them, and they're not being trained quick enough. I think he's went and spoke to people in industry about this as well, right? The body of FOSS, is it, or SULIS, or whatever they call them. He's had meetings with them about this, and it's all fallen on deaf ears, you know?
Well, Jim Jim is a great advocate of reforming the apprenticeship system.
Absolutely.
CJ, how did you get your apprenticeship? You obviously didn't have your leaving cert. You were advised to go back and do it, which you did. But did you say, right, I want an electrical apprenticeship, and then the employer, if you like, chooses you. Is that how it works?
So, yeah, Mick. So basically what happened was I did it as an experience in Fortier because COVID hit and I was, look, I want to do something. So I went and asked my GAA coach because he was an electrician. I said, look, do you have any work experience or anything that I can do? And he said, look, I'll bring you along for the summer and see how you get on and whatever.
Okay, that's how you got into it.
Yeah, and then he said, I can offer you an apprenticeship, but I'd advise you to go finish your leaving cert. So that's what I did. And then I had one or two jobs after leaving cert, but I said, you know what? I actually want to go do electrical again because I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Morris, do you think that apprenticeship should be more college-based with maybe 2 or 3 week block releases for on-site experience or what?
Well, they kind of originated from going to work with your dad, right? Whatever job he was doing, and you got trained into his job then. And then the education side of it came into it with time, you know, because back in the day, there would have been no schooling. You would have just learned with your hands, you know, that kind of way. You're talking about electrics there, now there's a lot of theory with that, right? And I have an interest in mechanics now, so I'll talk about that. Like, to go out of car today, Mick, you nearly want a computer degree for all the electronics that's on it, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you would have to have the education side of it. But you can put that first. You can put a sort of an entry-level educational thing, and you can do it with industry. But the point that I was making was, it's actually, and it's following from what Jim is saying, it's actually like a closed shop, the system that's running now. I was listening to Joe Duffy about 4 years ago, and he had a man from a travelling background on, right?
Yeah.
And he was working as an electrician's mate somewhere in Dublin, right? And had been doing that for about 15 years. So he was the guy bringing in the rolls of cable, pulling cables into ducts, bringing them all the way up to the fuse boards, you know, and bringing them out to the socket, right? All the first fix kind of work,
yep.
Chasing walls, plastering it back. He was getting things ready for the electrician. All the electrician did then came along then and wired up the socket, bolted it onto the wall, and wired up the MCBs onto the fuse board and put the mains lines in, right? This guy was saying, I would love to do that, but I cannot. I cannot afford to go and study to do it, right? He could go to England, there's different courses in England to do that. He said, I can't afford to go and study it, and I can't afford to start an apprenticeship at this age in my life. Yeah. So he was effectively locked over. And I was looking at him and saying, you know, you're actually right. You're actually so right. Now, you have a situation then where you'd have ex-prisoners, okay? They're up in the jail, 3 or 4 years serving the term up there, reading books, trying to educate themselves. Wouldn't it be a great thing to teach them these kind of things? Teach them plumbing, right? Teach them plastering, teach them bricklaying, to a good standard now that when you'd come out, you're straight away employable, right? Because you have now a trade certificate.
It's not a bad idea, I guess, yeah. Whether it's workable or not, I don't know, but it's not a bad idea.
And we can't seem to do it.
Thanks, Morris. Great stuff as always.
Thank you.
Cheers. Just want to finish up with CJ, just to give your business a bit of a plug. You want to make a real go of this business now, don't you, CJ?
Exactly, Mick. Yeah. No, it's what I wanted to do now. So for the past year, almost. So yeah, no, I'm going to give it a good shot and just see how it goes. And that's it, really.
Okay. And it's Prime Washing Service, yeah. And it is on Instagram. If you'd like to support him. Well done to CJ for setting up his business at 22. Well done to that young man, Mick, says Frank. So there's people out there. You're in the Ballincollig area anyway, CJ. Yeah. CJ Palmer. You might be well known to some people who are listening at the moment. And you're starting a new business at 22, and you're going to take on the world, I'd say.
Yeah, hopefully that's the plan anyway, Mick.
And come here, CJ, if it all fails, right?
Yeah.
If it all fails, you've got a lovely deep voice for radio. Thanks, CJ.
Thanks a million,
best of luck with it. That's CJ Palmer. You can check him out and you can support him at Prime Washing Service on Instagram.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. Just a few texts before we go to our next caller. Decriminalised drug use? No, thank you. Come live in Carrigaline and smell the weed wafting through the air in the evenings. It's sickening. Much like on every street in New York, says Mary. Texts on the weather. The climate always changes since time began. It's a natural, continuous process. Mankind cannot control the climate. It's totally out of our control, says Pat from Cork. Weather manipulation, Mick. Wake up. Says Eddie, I'm well aware of cloud seeding. I've seen it happen in Dubai, Eddie. And well aware of the extent of weather manipulation as we can do it at the moment. Nobody is saying the climate isn't changing. Where are you getting that from? As your guest says, you can argue about what's causing it. In my opinion, there are numerous reasons. One, human activity. Two, the shift in the magnetic poles, which is accelerating every year. And three, we're coming very close to the 12,000-year cycle in which the Earth's climate changes dramatically. The climate changes every 12,000 years, says Mick in Bantir. Now then, motorists are facing a major hit at the pumps from the 1st of August as temporary fuel excise duty reductions come to an end. The expected increases are diesel plus 32 cent per litre, petrol plus 27 cent per litre. And what that means for drivers is a typical 60 litre diesel fill-up could cost almost 20 euros more, and a typical 60 litre petrol fill-up could cost more than 16 euros extra. This is meant to be coming into effect on the 1st of August. Sinn Féin TD Donica O'Leary joins us on line one. Is it coming into effect, Donica?
That's right, yeah, on the 1st of August, and I think this will come as a big shock to people, Mick. This was part of the Finance Act, which was passed during the course of this week, and Sinn Féin put forward amendments to stop this increase. Like, these are not small increases here. I think they will have a huge hit on people's income. Diesel will go back up to over 2 euro a litre. They'll go up 32 cents, and petrol will be very close to it, going up 27 cents. It's already mostly kind of around 176, 177, 178 kind of territory. So it'll be very, very close to in and around the 2 euro mark again. This is going to be a massive hit for people. It's going to be, it's a bit of a nasty shock for people. I think most people felt that the worst was perhaps over, but because of government decisions in the Finance Act, it now is adding to a cost of living crisis that takes in everything from food to home heating costs, to childcare, and people just are absolute breaking point. Like, there was a report out from Bernardo's during the week told us that more than half of parents are worried that they don't have enough fuel to put into the car to get them from week to week. So that is the real pressures the real family and real workers are under at this point in time. So we put forward that amendment, but unfortunately it was defeated. But I think an awful lot of people aren't aware that this is coming down the tracks, and it's going to be a massive hit to families that are already under a lot of pressure as we come into the back to school season.
Okay, is it a fait accompli at the moment, or do the government have room to manoeuvre here and reconsider?
The government definitely have room to manoeuvre. Obviously, they're a government that's in the majority. So, obviously, if they decide, then, you know, they have the majority, unless there is a lot of political pressure on them. So ultimately, that's going to be our objective here. And that's why we put forward those amendments. But it's not going to be the last step either. We're going to keep on raising this. And we're hoping that the rest of the opposition, because to be totally honest, some of the rest of the opposition was a bit quiet about this. We're the only people to put forward amendments at this stage. And some others even voted against our proposals, but we're hoping that some of the rest of the opposition will see that, look, people are under savage pressure. Like, I was raising, like, this cost of living crisis goes right across the board. I was raising in the Dáil last week. The childcare fees, like, the government went to the public last year and they said that they will cap, that they will work to deliver 200 euro a month childcare costs, 200 euro per child. The caps that they have put in place are much closer to 200 euro a week. They're a long distance away from 200 euro a month. So if you are driving a car, if you are renting, and if you have childcare, there's not a lot of left there at the end of the day for anything else. And similarly for people who have, you know, who have maybe home heating oil costs, who have other costs, who maybe have additional healthcare costs. So we have a system here in this state where an awful lot of people in the middle who are paying their taxes, and everyone has to pay their taxes, and that is important, but ultimately they're being asked to pay twice for so many things, whether it's additional childcare, third level fees, healthcare and so on. And then on top of that you have these fuel costs that are going to be very, very significant, bringing fuel prices to over 2 euro a litre.
But aren't they just taking back what they gave us temporarily after the fuel protests and the massive shock to the prices after the US and Israel invaded Iran? Are they just taking back what they gave us temporarily?
Well, like, I mean, objectively, that's true. Yeah, Mick, I'm not saying otherwise, but I would say two things. One is this is absolutely the wrong time. People are still under savage pressure. And the other point I'd make is that this cost of living crisis didn't just start with the war in Iran. Of course, it made it more severe. And of course, it had an impact on fuel supply across the world. But like we were raising right back to last September, the fact that you talk to businesses and you talk to families right across the country, the biggest pressure that they were facing was very often in terms of energy. We have the highest energy prices, particularly in terms of electricity and home heating in Europe.
What's the story with home heating oil, Dunica?
Well, the government refused to add, their action on that package, which we felt was inadequate, and that was one of the biggest criticisms we had of it, is that they didn't cut the excise on the home heating oil at that point in time. So really, there's been no relief for those people. I suppose this is a time of year that maybe people aren't necessarily putting in the order for home heating oil. But look, it's only a couple of months down the line. We do need to be looking towards that. You know, obviously the weather is good now, but, you know, people will potentially have to make hard decisions about how much home heating oil they get in come October, November. So, I think it was a profound mistake in the spring February, March kind of territory that they didn't provide any relief in terms of home heating oil. But it goes right across the board. Irish people are paying more for energy than almost of all kinds, whether it's for vehicles or for home heating or for business, than almost anyone else in Europe. And it's all part of a cost of living crisis that the government is only barely acknowledging and certainly not addressing.
Okay. I'm conscious, Dunica O'Leary, Sinn Féin TD, that it's quite easy for a radio presenter and a member of the opposition to go on the air and bash the government, as it were. I'm also conscious that the squeeze middle have been getting squeezed a lot more than the squeeze middle in other countries, shall we say. We've had repeated annual increases in carbon tax, home heating oil, gas, coal, of course, transport, therefore, more expensive. The deposit return scheme for all of the, you know, the green additions and benefits it brings, consumers must pay for that up front. We've had increases in the minimum unit prices on alcohol and tobacco. Obviously, rising energy costs and fuel costs and utility bills, that will continue to put pressure on household finances and increase costs in businesses. These will often have to be passed on to customers through higher prices. Anyway, the result is that temporary measures come in like this, and as we'll see on the 1st of August, they're taken away again. But USC was a temporary measure, but when it works in their favour, it becomes permanent.
Yeah, well, I suppose typically they, I think there's a degree of seeing what way the wind blows with this particular government. I think it has to be said, an awful lot was promised in the last election in terms of relief for people that hasn't come to pass. So we were promised relief in terms of third level fees, didn't happen. Promised significant change in terms of childcare costs. One of the biggest costs, and obviously it doesn't affect every family, but see for those families who are paying for childcare, it's absolutely crippling. If you have two children, it's more than your mortgage that you're paying in childcare fees. No action in relation to that. In terms of the means test for carers, you know, the state cannot do without the care that people are providing. And obviously they're primarily doing that out of love and out of a sense of duty to their loved ones. But ultimately, they're also making the state a significant saving. And we need to shore that up. We need to reinforce that so that those people feel supported and that we can continue to ensure that they get the support that they need at home. So on all these issues, these were promised in the last election and they haven't delivered them. And ultimately, in terms of all the measures, all the issues that you've talked about, and they all add up and put huge pressures on families and workers and on small businesses. And of course, you can't tackle all of them at once. We put forward an alternative budget every September, October, and we outline what we would take on in a given year. And clearly, you cannot do everything. But the key point is this, I think. We have to reorientate the way that the state works in terms of there are so many things that the state is asking to pay people to pay for twice, once in their taxes and once out of their pocket again. So health is the obvious one. You know, we pay for a public healthcare system and yet people have to pay for GP fees and all kinds of costs in terms of prescriptions, in terms of hospital fees of certain kinds. You look at third level fees, astronomical costs for an awful lot of people. Again, people who have paid for it through their taxes, and similarly in terms of childcare. People, you could have two parents working in a household who are going out there, they're making their contribution, they're working as hard as they can, doing everything right as far as the state is concerned. They're paying for part-time or full-time childcare, and it's absolutely crippling.
But everything they spend is spending money that's already been taxed. If they want to fill the car They pay inordinate amount of tax on their already taxed money. If they want to heat their home, they do the same. If they want to pay their electricity and gas bills, there's a VAT and a tax levy on that. If they want to buy groceries, if they even want to enjoy a social occasion, everything they spend is spending their already taxed money, giving more tax.
And that's exactly it, Mick. That's exactly it, Mick. Like, the fundamental point is this, is that, yes, of course, we all have a system where everyone pays their taxes and everyone, you know, that is an important part of how the state works. But ultimately, what's missing in this state at the minute is the fact that there are a lot of people who are paying in and they're not in a position to draw out of it. They're not getting support with their childcare. They're not getting support with their education. They're not getting support in terms of healthcare. And that is the fundamental problem with how the state is set up in terms of the cost of living crisis that needs to be addressed.
Okay, one final question. We'll leave it there, Donica. What do you think is going to happen on the 1st of August? Will they put these levies back on, or will they save face with their visiting European counterparts here for the next 6 months for the European presidency? Do you think they'll risk unseemly protests, in their eyes unseemly, very warranted in the eyes of those who might be protesting? Do you think they'll risk more protests during the presidency?
Look, I haven't a crystal ball, but like, I mean, I would say that at the minute their intention is to proceed with them. Our intention is to ensure that they don't, to put pressure on to get them to reverse this. And I would say the presidency, I think there will be protests, and I think in many respects there should be protests, not only on this issue, but on an awful lot of other issues.
Your party's been accused of whipping up those protests or engineering them.
Well, look, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a democratic society and people have a right to protest and it should be peaceful and it should be proportionate and so on. But at the end of the day, if people have issues that they are concerned about and simply raising them isn't enough, then yes, I think people have a right. And not just on this issue, there's an awful lot of other issues, including international issues, including trade union and workers' rights issues, all of these issues. I don't think that just because there's a presidency there that we close down a part of our democracy. Clearly, people have a right to assemble and a right to have their say.
Okay. Donica O'Leary, Sinn Féin TD, thanks for joining us this morning on the Neil Prendeville Show. And it's true, you know, while government they'll constantly point to the economy as being strong or buoyant, great performance, record tax revenues, the sad fact is that many workers and families and pensioners and small businesses, I suppose, as well as big businesses, are feeling that they're constantly and ever more being financially squeezed. Government decisions have consequences. This one will have a huge consequence, whichever way it goes. Every tax increase, every levy, every additional charge ultimately lands in one place, on the shoulders of the public. It's coming up on 10:45.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And some comments on the impending increase in diesel prices and petrol prices. Yeah, you're right, Mick. I reckon they won't implement these increases until their six-month presidency of the EU is over. They won't want to risk embarrassing protests. Fuel protest part two, says Joe. Beta says the kids will be off school so more people can attend the protest. Government beware. Dean says it's time to block up the roads again. Karen said, are they blaming Sinn Féin for the fuel protests when clearly the blame lies with the government? No, but what I was saying to Donica O'Leary, Sinn Féin TD there, was the government are blaming Sinn Féin for stirring up the protests. Who is really shocked, says Brian. This government has never known what it's like for people trying to manage money when they're being taxed into oblivion. Micheál Martin should be ashamed of himself. He sends millions abroad week after week and spends billions. Shane says political suicide. People won't forget that if it happens. Mike says it's not acceptable. Government need to stop screwing the motorists and should not be over-dependent on fuel taxation. And Jared says it's an absolute joke and billions spent on iPass centres. Protests out and everybody needs to support. Get an EV is the answer from George. Dennis, good morning.
Neil, how are you, sir?
Good, it's Mick, but don't worry about it. Dennis, you're a van driver.
I am indeed.
Okay, what do you think?
It's to be expected, really, because the government literally live in a bubble up in Ballair, and anything south of the M50 is doesn't exist to them. The fact that it's going up, nearly 30 cents for petrol and whatever it is for diesel, it's typical of the government, like, and it's just handy that they kind of bring in these new kind of fuel hikes before they go conveniently off on their hollybobs.
Well, I don't think they go on holidays without having it sorted, and I honestly don't think they'll push it for the 1st of August. The oil and fuel supply is not going to be recovered. The peace in the Middle East is somewhat tenuous at the moment. It seems like Iran have now taken control of the Strait of Hormuz for the future. As regards to, it'll be their choice and Oman's choice if they jointly apply tolls to the Strait of Hormuz. So this crisis is far from over. And the dog in the street could tell you that they need to extend these reliefs. I've seen the diesel and petrol come into the 160s now. There's one at 159 up somewhere up in the country. But as Donal O'Leary was saying, this will put each at two euros a litre or over.
Yeah, it will. It'll cripple the everyday person yet again, because, like I said, I've seen petrol stations, like advertising petrol for like 182, and I've seen others, like big name brands, like at 170. I passed one last night at €1.70. So it's like they're passing the buck onto the normal everyday motors.
Is that what you are, Dennis? Are you driving for yourself or are you driving for a company?
Driving for a company.
Okay, and what would your weekly spend be on juice?
How do I put it? A lot.
What would the increase be? Would it be in the order of a couple of hundred quid a week?
Oh, no, be more. Be nudging nearly 1,000 or more.
What do you deliver?
Oh, well, I kind of work for Renault, so I'd be going around the country collecting vans and delivering post vans and stuff. So on average, filling up a van at the moment is, off the top of my head, is about 120 euro every time you fill a van.
It isn't long ago that you wouldn't get 100 euros into any vehicle in this country except a truck.
I remember filling my car up and it would be full to the top for about 40, 45 euro, and that's full, and it would last me, 2 weeks? I fill up my own car at home full to the top, it lasts me a week.
And we've ever more cars on the road now. Thousands, hundreds of thousands more cars on the road.
Yeah, and like I said, the government are sending or giving me incentives to buy EVs. The problem with EVs, a lot of EVs is, for one, they wouldn't do the range of, say, what a diesel car would do. Now, the newer ones probably will get you close, but a lot of the chargers and the charging stations are, say, Type 2 chargers, which my own personal car is, but other ones then are high-speed chargers. Not an awful lot of, say, the EVs from, say, 2021 upwards don't have the capability of doing, fast charge. So this whole EV thing, until it goes up to 600 plus out of range, I'll stick to my own car, thanks.
I have a text here, Dennis, that is quite topical to what you're saying there. Mick, are people aware they can bring in an electric car from a main dealer in Northern Ireland, say Toyota, VRT free, if it's at least 6 months old and have at least 6,000 kilometres on the clock? Any warranty remaining on the car will be honoured on Republic of Ireland by Toyota. It applies to electric cars only. And I'm asked, this isn't a fact, I'm asked if I can confirm this. A texter says, I bought a 2-litre BMW Japanese import recently, and my motor tax is €270 a month. And that's regarding a call we had yesterday. So do you see, when you're on the road so much, and obviously all over the country, are the recharging stations or charging stations becoming more prominent around the place?
They're becoming more prominent, yes, but you still see... you still see cars that park inside, or particularly in cities and stuff, that are not EVs or electric cars. Trying to get an EV spot in a lot of major cities and towns is difficult at times, because people just use them as a car parking space, even though they shouldn't be in there because they're not an EV. I think they should be fined, because trying to find an EV spot is hence teed at times.
Mm. I think it took the Irish public many, many years to find the backbone that's often so evident by the French. They'd protest at the drop of an envelope over there. But it took the pensioners coming out on the water charges, and then it took the farmers and the haulage people coming out on the fuel prices. Do you think the government will be afraid of this type of protest again?
No, because they basically bullies the protesters into submitting, because in fines, they basically just wore them down completely, which I think was...
Well,
it did bring the country to a halt.
They'll definitely deploy greater security to the the important power generating and oil distribution facilities next time round. So it's probably going to be rolling protests and city protests. I just can't see that happening. I honestly can't see it needing to happen during the EU presidency. Maybe it's a good thing for us. I don't know.
Yeah, but something has to be done, though, because they can't keep putting up the prices up 25 and 30 cents every time. I mean, where does all the fuel coming into the country come from? Does it come through the Strait of Hormuz or does it come from the North Sea?
North Sea. Most of it.
So why is the government saying, oh, there's a slight rumble over there, we better put up the prices through the roof and try and cripple everyone else? That's what they seem to be doing. They're constantly blaming someone else or something else. They will never blame themselves.
Okay, got to leave it there, Dennis. Thanks a million. Got a couple of more texts to get to. If this fuel price increase goes ahead, we as a nation need to make the last fuel protest look minuscule in comparison. This government need to be taught a harsh lesson, says JP. Another one says, the reason the government made July 31st the day the fuel allowance runs out for hauliers and farmers is because August 1st is the start of the cutting season for farmers, so they use twice the amount of diesel than normal, and the government will be laughing all the way to the bank. And that in from Desi. Now, there is a one-off gig happening on Wednesday week, okay? Yesterday fortnight, Wednesday week. It's the reformation of a band called Sleepy Hollow. Now, for Rory Gallagher Blues fans, this band features Pat Crowley on keyboards, Mary Black fame, of course. He also played with the Swarbrigs. Johnny Campbell on bass, because the original bass player of Sleepy Hollow, Johnny Rice, sadly passed away a few years ago. Artie Lorigan on drums. Joe O'Callaghan of Hot Guitar is going to be joining in as well. For a few of Johnny Rice's songs. He wrote one song, actually, called Come On Joe. It was written about Joe O'Hurley. Joe O'Hurley was Sleepy Hollow's roadie. Joe O'Hurley then went on to worldwide fame as the sound engineer with U2. And Sleepy Hollow's manager, by the way, was Dennis Desmond, who went on to form MCD Promotion. So this is a real nostalgic gig. Wednesday week, it's going to be happening in Pa Johnson's. I imagine it'll start around 9 o'clock. Sleepy Hollow, reforming for one gig. If you've any wrinkly rocker friends who are not listening to this programme today, be sure to remind them Sleepy Hollow are back for one night only.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Morning from the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Be part of the conversation. You can get in touch on 0818 104 106. That's our phone line or our text line on SMS, WhatsApp or WhatsApp voicemail. Voice note is 0868 104 106. Now, it seems as if while I was talking to Sinn Féin TD Donegal Laoghaire, there has been some softening of the government's position on what's going to happen with the impending 32 cent and 27 cent increases on the 1st of August on petrol and diesel. A decision to extend excise duty cuts on petrol and diesel could be taken by the government next week. To ensure there'll be no cliff edge to supports. Taoiseach and Finance Minister Simon Harris has hinted that could be 5 cent this month, 5 cent the next month, 5 cent, just as little as they can, I suppose, to get it all back in the end, but do it in a soft measure as prices come down, which makes sense in a way. However, he told the Dáil while he accepts nobody can absorb a full 32 cent increase in fuel prices, he, quote, cannot ignore, unquote, that petrol and diesel prices have started to fall in recent days. Now, following the outbreak of war in Iran, the government introduced excise cuts in mid-April. This reduced excise on diesel by 32 cent and petrol by 27 cent. This included a reduction of the NORA levy, says the Examiner Online. The current cuts are due to expire July 31st. But while taking questions in the Dáil, Simon Harris said that the government accepts there can't be a cliff edge. It can't be just one minute to 12. It's going to be this. And a minute past 12, it's going to be 32 cent extra. He was responding there to Sinn Féin TD Piers Doherty and Fianna Fáil TD John Connolly. And the finance minister said there will have to be a balance. So a certain softening of the position there indicated that things may begin to move and we'll get some clarity on next week. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning, Mick. How are you?
Good. You want to talk to me about vapes?
Yeah, I was just saying, like I said there in my text, I was watching the news there yesterday, and the start of the news was, again, harping on about vapes and banning flavour vapes. And then by the end of the news headlines, I heard that we're planning to decriminalise drugs, including Class A drugs. And I just thought, if this wasn't Ireland, people would think that was pretty strange.
Yeah, I was unclear yesterday. Was the decriminalisation proposal, now this is coming before the Oireachtas, by the way, just to do with the softer drugs, like maybe hash or weed or something, or did it include Class A drugs like crack cocaine, cocaine itself in its powder form, and heroin? It seems to be all-encompassing on that one. What will we talk about first, drugs or vapes?
Well, I think regarding vapes, not just because I vape myself, but clearly I've skin in the game. I mean, they've been in Ireland alone for 20 years. Worldwide, I couldn't tell you. And despite all the hopes and prayers of the medical profession, people aren't presenting with problems because of them in large numbers or any numbers that I'm aware of. And they just keep saying, I heard Professor Crowell there, he's an oncologist, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yes.
But he always is the first to harp on about vapes. Now, he doesn't totally dismiss them, but he goes down the route that they all do. Well, we can't say they're safe. Well, after 20 years here alone, if you can't say they're safe, like, that's just nonsense. Nonsense.
Okay, but what the this bill will do is regulate, further regulate, nicotine vaping products. Remember, they got a big hit in the budget as well. Introduce measures to address other what they call novel nicotine products, such as nicotine pouches. Is that the ones you put under your tongue? I suppose it is, or is that nicotine gum? I think that's a pouch, is it?
I've tried those, actually, and apparently if you go to Sweden, nobody smokes. They all use these pouches, but they contain nicotine in, I think it's in Sweden. It's mainly those little pouches you put either up behind your lip or under your tongue, and it dissolves.
And I'd say they would be fairly addictive too.
Well, nicotine is the thing that gets us all addicted. When you smoke it, put it on a patch or chew it in chewing gum, which, of course, the government wants to push that because they get their cush. And Nicorette have their patches and they have their gum. But up to recently, they had an inhaler and it was like sucking on talcum powder. But it was a vape by another name, if you like.
I'm not sure if this bill is going to be a bit of a toothless shark when it comes to vapes. They're voting on restricting colours and imagery on nicotine-inhaling products and packaging. So they're going to ban the colours, right? And then ban all flavour descriptions and language other than the basic flavour names. So you can't have your shockingly melon pineapple-y burst, but you can have melon and pineapple.
I think it's just absolute nonsense. Now, I do agree, okay, you can see a lot of teenagers and underage kids and stuff and whatever, smoking vapes. But I would say maybe put a restriction. Probably, actually, I'd go as far as to say it. Totally ban disposable vapes, because teenagers and kids aren't buying a vape and charging it up at home for their mother and father to look at it. You know, the disposable ones are really the enemy for the younger generation, but don't penalise adult responsible vapers, you know.
Yeah, responsible taxpayers as well.
Yes, extremely.
Do you think flavours in nicotine inhaling products should be limited?
No, I don't see what difference it makes.
What flavour do you like yourself?
Well, ironically, I only smoke the tobacco flavour.
So are you a recovering smoker then, former smoker?
Yes, I'd be 20, 30 a day in the past, and I've been vaping 10 years now, and I don't have a cough, I don't have anything. I had my NCT with the doctor there back in March. I got a clean bill of health, so that's just me. But what I'm saying really, like, is, well, at the moment, I suppose the decriminalisation of drugs, including Class A drugs. So, like, is that the case then for every age group? Like, if it's a 16-year-old caught with a bit of coke or a bit of heroin, is that decriminalised for them as well? Is there an age limit on the decriminalisation?
It's only a general discussion at the moment before the Oireachtas. I don't think there's any age attached to it at the moment, nor any quantity. I mean, you can't be carrying around a kilo of coke and say, that's for my personal possession, my personal use. You know, there's going to have to be a weight limit or a volume limit, I think, attached to the bill as well.
So 16-year-old Johnny and Mary or 15-year-old Johnny and Mary could go around with a bag of coke, but God forbid they'd have a flavoured vape. Is that what we're saying, basically?
That's the irony of the two opposite sides of the press today, isn't it? On the other side of it, Ireland has been told it needs to take its head out of the sand about the drugs crisis and decriminalise the personal possession of drugs. Now, this is what the Oireachtas has heard. This has cross-party support. All drugs to be removed from the statute book on a personal possession basis. And this is a committee They've gone one step further than, you remember the CADU, I think, the Citizens Assembly on Drugs Use? They said possession should still remain illegal in law, but form sort of criminalisation, decriminalisation, I beg your pardon, should be adopted in practice. In other words, you've broken the law, you're a naughty boy, but you can do a course, maybe.
Yeah, well, I don't personally have a lot of faith in the Citizens' Assembly, because to this day, I'd like to know who actually picks who goes on the Citizens' Assembly, and it's, that information seems to be very lacking.
I never thought of it that way. I never thought of it.
It's
like, how does the guy how does the guy who drives the snowplow get to his work in the morning?
I don't know.
Same question. So are you?
I thought it was a joke. You were going to crack.
It was.
Well, yeah, I can see what you mean. Now, yeah.
So where do you stand on personal possession? Decriminalise it or keep it in the criminal statute books?
Well, the thing is, like, you'll decriminalise it for the person. But I mean, all this, if it is introduced, which would be absolute nightmare, you may as well hand someone a loaded gun and play Russian roulette and think it's normal to do it. I mean, that's quite dangerous. And it's going to do nothing about the criminal gangs. I mean, they're still going to make their money, except their clients now won't have to run off and hide. They can go around in comfort if this is passed.
Okay,
so how is that going to benefit anyone and society in the long run?
Okay. Now, while Taoiseach Micheál Martin, as any Taoiseach would, have said that the government would assess the report and engage with the Health and Justice Departments, that's fairly standard for anyone who might be Taoiseach. But the Gardaí remain resolutely opposed to removing the criminal offence of possession. There was a statement by Detective Chief Super Seamus Boland. He said that drug policy should take into account that around 80% of the population don't use drugs, but they're still impacted by it, and stressed the Gardaí will enforce the laws decided by the Oireachtas.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hypocrisy again, and if you want to go around the route of our legal, look at the legal drugs that we have, alcohol and tobacco. Now, look at the restrictions that were put on alcohol. Off licences used to open at 9 in the morning and open to 11 at night. They were restricted from 10:30 to 10 or 10:30 at night. They had to put, they didn't put warning labels, but tobacco products had to have plain packaging with pictures of rotten lungs and all this and warnings and the whole lot. That's the two drugs that are legal. And now they're talking about decriminalising, not legalising. I know there's a difference, but they're kind of making it sort of, well, so what? Like, as I said, little Johnny, 15-year-old Johnny and Mary has a bag of coke. Go way off into the woods and have a good snort for yourself. But God forbid you should have a strawberry-flavoured vape. That is so dangerous.
Look, it is a fair point. It's diametrically opposed reasoning, I suppose. If you put the two pieces, they're two separate reports in today's papers, but when you put them side by side, it does give for a little amusement, if nothing else. But do you think it allows the guards then to use common sense? If a guy is caught with a joint or whatever, that he gets a warning and don't let me catch you again, or because I have the option to arrest you on it. But, it's mostly decriminalised unless I make a judgment that you have this not just for yourself but for somebody else, in which case you're coming with me.
Well, I think, Mick, already the guards probably would, not probably, I'd say definitely they're using some bit of common sense and a bit of, you know, this isn't quite that serious. Like, you know, I'm saying they'll do that already. I take that for granted they're doing that as it is anyway. I don't know. I can't say that for certain or swear on the Bible, but I'd assume they are already.
Anthony, thanks for coming on. We always have an entertaining conversation. I particularly enjoyed today's one. The pouch, I'm told, Anthony, do you know these things? The pouch is like a tiny tea bag. You pin it into your gum. Now, I've seen people using them, but I never saw one up close or touch one. I didn't realise it was kind of a tea bag thing. I thought it was just a piece of...
In Sweden, Mick, they're the way to go. Nobody smokes. They all use them.
And apparently teenagers here are using them a lot. And I would imagine they're using them in stressful situations like exams as well.
Yeah, I mean, shortly now, if this is past, they could just do a line of coke before the exam, they'd fly through it.
Or during.
Maybe jump out the window and it's over, but you're so what.
Go on, we'll get in trouble. Cheers.
All the best, Mick.
Cheers, bye-bye. Always entertaining. Anthony on the Neil Prendeville Show. To our text on 0868 104 106, well done to that young man, Mick. I will be looking him up online, CJ Palmer, and his new business and booking some cleaning from him. On the vacant property subject, Mick, there are 26 properties between Roach's Buildings and Sutton's Buildings vacant for between 2 and 4 years. It's a joke and people are crying out for housing. I think the government are taking some initiatives in that regard and pushing the councils. Now, interesting comment from Taoiseach Simon Harris blaming the councils 2 weeks ago for all these vacant properties. My last count, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael had over 490 councillors on councils around the country. So who are they blaming? We spoke about apprentices earlier on. SOLAS, which is funded to provide training for our apprentices, has a budget of over 1 billion euros per year. Yet on average, only about 1,500 apprentices start every year in this country. They can't handle any more because they don't have the facilities. And there seems to be little interest in upgrading them to increase apprenticeship numbers. When I met with them in Dublin last year, I was told by the head of SOLAS at the meeting, we don't need any more apprenticeships in Ireland. Foreigners are building the country. Thanks, Jim, for your text.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. This is Mick Mulcahy. We're going to the UK now, where I believe it's 34 degrees, Stu.
Yeah, it certainly is. Mick, how are you, mate? You all right?
I'm very good. You would be of the same ilk as me in believing. I'm not prompting you. I haven't spoken to you about this. I'm not prompting you at all. You would, I think you would believe, like me, that the best pub in Ireland is?
The Donkey.
The Roaring Donkey. We would agree on that. And I know that because...
Enough, that's for sure.
I know that because I see you on Facebook and places say, I'm only 16 hours away from a cold one.
Yeah.
How long are you in the UK now, Stu?
26 years now, Mick. I'm living in Bristol. But yeah, it's all good. Except it's too bloody hot here at the moment. But other than that, it's fine.
Not going to hit 34 here today, I think. But you certainly are baking over there. Do you find it easy to get over and back from Bristol? I know from your socials you've had to fly into Dublin and get a train rather than Bristol Cork, which should be easy and cheap.
If I can, I go to Cork, but it can be very expensive flying into Cork for some reason, whereas you're flying into Dublin is a hell of a lot cheaper. And, you know, sometimes hiring a car can be cheaper and filling it up than flying directly into Cork. And, of course, then having the car under you for the weekend is quite nice as well, because you can kind of come and go as you please, you know.
Speaking about having that car under you, you were listening to our petrol and diesel conversation there. It's pretty much the same in the UK. Any of these easements are coming to an end, are they?
Originally it was supposed to come to an end in September, but they've put that out now to the end of this year. But it's still too expensive, generally speaking. I did a bit of research on it a couple of days ago, and the average price of a litre of petrol here in the UK at the moment is about 1.55 to 1.60 a litre, and 79 pence of that is going then directly to HMRC, which is the taxman, basically, to you and I.
His Majesty's Revenue Commissioners.
So, you know, well over half that is going to HMRC. And, you know, you get, like, the Chancellor here, who's probably the most hated woman on the planet here, certainly here in the UK. But, I mean, she comes up with these harebrained schemes, which, you know, we're going to give you £1.60 off the cost of an entrance to a theme park, you know, or we're going to reduce VAT on biscuits. And that's going to make it all better, you know. But
Rachel Reeves, yeah?
Yeah. She won't be in post much longer the way things are looking, though. But I mean, it was, you know, these kind of harebrained schemes, you know, where the government just don't listen. And I speak to family and friends back home in Ireland as well. And, you know, they've seen their costs going through the roof, you know, just to get to work. I think what annoys people is, you know, you hear government ministers saying, well, we're going to reduce VAT or we're going to reduce duty by 5p a litre. Big deal. They're still making a fortune on all of this stuff. I mean, they could reduce it by 30 pence and they'd still be making money. And that's what annoys people. And of course, here in the UK from 2028, if you own an EV or a hybrid, you're going to be paying per mile as well, on top of your car tax, you know. So if you want,
and you have congestion charges in certain cities, don't you?
And you've got congestion charges, and you've got low emission zone charges, and you've got all of that. So it's very anti-motorist. I mean, if it was a question that you could, you could use, you know, reliable public transport, great. I would be all in favour of that. But where I live, there's not reliable public transport. For me to get to my work location where I work, it's about an hour's commute. If I was to try and do that in a bus, it would take 3.5 hours to do that same commute, you know. And then, of course, the buses aren't reliable. I mean, even this morning, two of them were cancelled because of the heat type thing. And there's only so many times you can ring your bus and say, well, I'm not coming in today because, you know, whatever reason. So people do rely on the car a lot. But unfortunately, their costs have gone through the roof. And, you know, the Iran war, of course, plays into that as well. But, you know, when you see the amount of duty and tax that's applied per litre of petrol and diesel, and it's even more for diesel then, of course, you know, so the average cost of a litre of diesel over here at the moment is about 165 to 175, depending on where you buy it. And then, of course, with 78 pence of that going straight to HMRC.
I was very amused with some government TDs coming on here to Neil at the time of the gift to us of reduced taxes on petrol and diesel, saying this package now is we're giving a €250 million package here, as if they were handing us cash. They're not giving away anything. They're just taking a bit less from midnight tonight kind of thing. So they'll take less to by 250, but they're not giving anything.
Correct. I mean, even here in the UK, the fuel duty was frozen in March 2022 at 53.9 pence per litre. But then you're paying VAT on top of that. So you're paying another 20% on top of that. And then that was supposedly what they call the fuel duty escalator, where every year it would go up in line with inflation. But they froze that in 2022. But they're getting rid of that now at the end of the year, which means it goes up with inflation. So if inflation is higher, the fuel prices go up. So every year you can be guaranteed that the fuel prices will go up. Now, they go up almost instantly, as you know, but it takes them 6 months to come down. And that annoys people as well. It's the same fuel that they bought type thing. But I mean, and even here where I am locally, at the moment I'm off today, but even where I am locally, there's three garages and they all have completely different prices on them.
You know, there's about a 10 or 12 cent difference here in Cork. If you look around hard enough, you'll find 10 or 12 cent of a difference.
Exactly.
And that adds up, you know.
Of course it does, yeah. I mean, if you're filling up your car twice a week or whatever, you know, to get to work, it makes a hell of a difference at the end of the year, you know.
Mm. Well, we weren't to talk about this, but I know you're well across British politics and the advent of Andy Burnham coming in as the next prime. I mean, the most solid resident of Downing Street at the moment is Larry the Cat.
I'd vote for him for Prime Minister because he's the only guy that's been there for the last kind of 11 years. I mean, we've had
look at who's been. Let me see if I can remember. We started with the whole Brexit debacle was foisted upon the British public by David Cameron.
Yes.
Then he left, and in came. Correct me if I'm wrong in the order here. Then we had Theresa May. Then we had Boris Johnson. Then we had briefly Liz Truss. Following that, we had Rishi Sunak.
Correct.
And then we had the, up to recently, Sir Keir Starmer.
Correct.
And now
we'll have seven prime ministers in 10 years, which is ridiculous.
Is it's Brexit the cause of that, do you think?
I don't think it's the cause of it. I think it's a contributing factor to it, without a doubt. But I don't think it's the cause of it. I mean, there was for and against Brexit. I can understand why people wanted to leave. Equally, I can understand why people wanted to remain. But, you know, the fact is that the UK have left, so they just need to get on with it. But it seems to be stuck in this kind of limbo thing. I mean, Brexit was voted for 10 years ago, and we're still no better off than we were 10 years ago here in the UK. I mean, as I said, I've been here for more than 25 years, and the last kind of 10 years, you can see how much businesses have been affected by this, the amount of red tape that they have to go through to export stuff or even to import stuff. I mean, I've got family and friends, you know, making Ireland, you know, and if they want to buy stuff from the UK, they're now paying duty and, you know, and local VAT on that then as well. And then, of course, you've got the obligatory customs charges as well that you end up paying as well. So it's just made life more difficult. And a lot of businesses now just won't, in the UK, won't even sell into the European Union now, or Ireland for that matter, because of all of the paperwork that's involved with it.
Okay, back to the point at hand, I suppose, and let's wrap it up with petrol and diesel. A more sinister development in the UK is that you guys have changed the law now to make it a criminal offence to block petrol distribution points. That's under a Public Order Act.
That was done under the Public Order Act in 2022, I believe. It can be a criminal offence. It doesn't make it a criminal offence, but if the police deem you to be kind of blocking it on purpose, which is what any protest would be, it can be a criminal offence, and you can spend a lot of time in prison and an unlimited fine and all of that type of thing. So, but that was just a way of them basically saying, stay away from the distribution points, because I know what all of the fuel protests that happened in Ireland, and that made the news over here, by the way, those fuel protests, that was on the news here every single night. They were talking about that here, both on the local news, which was amazing, but also on the national news, it was making that as well, and fair play to them. Is what I'd say, because it did make the government listen. Even if it was only a temporary thing, but it did make him listen.
Okay. Stu, great to talk to you again. See you for a beer the next time you're back in the country. Make sure and give us a shout. And
absolutely. Nice speaking to you.
And I'm sure that'll be in the donkey. Stu McLaughlin, thank you very much from Bristol. 34 degrees at the moment in the UK. Just a couple of quick mentions. Congratulations to the Ballincollig under 15 hurlers on their national Fela win last Saturday. There were apparently major celebrations at the GAA club over the weekend. Hashtag up the village. So congrats to all the Ballincollig under 15 hurlers on their national Fela win last Saturday. And belated, one day late, happy birthday to Ella O'Reilly, who was 21 yesterday. Ella's from Passage West. And I bumped into her dad, John, last night. He asked me to play a request and I didn't want to forget it. So I wrote it on my hand. Ella O'Reilly, 21st birthday yesterday in Passage West. Lots of love from your dad, John. Now, our family pass today, and we'll open the lines at the end of the programme, is the Magic of Blarney Castle, a family pass to give away for one of Ireland's most iconic landmarks. You can climb the castle tower, you can kiss the legendary Blarney Stone and receive that famous gift of the gab, the power of eloquence and charm. And after exploring the castle and the garden and the grounds and getting a picture maybe, visit the castle's restaurant and cafe and you'll be surrounded by the beauty and the history of this world-famous attraction. www.blarneycastle.ie towards the end of the programme. Mick, did you know that two cars went on fire in the heat? Is this a coincidence? Were they electric vehicles? This is a couple of days ago in Cork. I don't have any more detail on that. But do cars go on fire in the heat or is it a coincidence? Asked our texter. Some more text that came in on the lost wedding ring issue. Hi Mick, my husband lost his wedding ring in Portugal in the sand as well. Well, it was actually his nephew lost it. My husband handed him the ring to hold and he dropped it straight in the sand in the middle of a group of us. And do you think we could find it in that one spot? Not a chance. We searched and searched, but no sign. It's bizarre, says Mary. And on beach days, Mick, can you please put this out? Please, people, enjoy the hot weather. Be safe at the beach, but be sun aware. Please take your rubbish, your cans, your bottles, your barbecue, your toys home for disposal and respect the beach. Is it that hard? Also be aware of your parking. If an incident occurs, the emergency services need space to get to a casualty. Some good information there and a nice plea from a texture. Please, please, if you take stuff to the beach, bring it home. Rubbish, cans, bottles, barbecues, toys, bring it home for disposal and respect the beach.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
20 to 12. By the way, if you've an interest in Camogie, the Cork versus Tipperary Camogie is going to be taking place. A Cork can seal an automatic spot in the Glendimplex All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship semi-finals. They're facing Tipperary in the last round of the group stages on Sunday, and the Rebels face the Premier County at 3:30 on Sunday in Parky Rin. Tickets are available on camogie.ie, and they very kindly gave us a pair of tickets to give away as well, which we'll open the lines for at the end of the programme. Just to give a little bit of limelight and a shout out to our Cork Camogie girls, Cork's opportunity to seal an automatic spot in the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship semi-finals facing Tip. In Parky Rin, in that Camogie game, facing the Premier County, 3:30 p.m. at Parky Rin. So come on, the Camogie girls. Aideen Delaney is on line one. Morning to you, Aideen.
Hi, Mick. How are you keeping?
I'm great. I can tell you're in good form because you had a good old night last night. You were in serious competition, though, with a young lady called Alanis Morissette.
That we were. And I mean, her speakers were a lot bigger than ours, I can tell you.
Okay, what's your music, what's your speakers, and what's the crack?
Well, the crack is now we have our Kayleigh Cushluck is back for the summer up until maybe sometime in the middle of August. depending on the weather, of course. It's all weather permitting because we're outdoors at the lock, live music, and people turned up last night. I didn't think they would with the weather and everything. It was very warm, but we were lovely and shaded, of course, with the trees. And there is a nice breeze comes from the water. And we did a great crack, actually. And we've live Irish dancing there, and we're 26 years there this year.
You know something? I'm sorry to tell you, it's the first I heard of it. I did hear of various events around the lock over the years. Like, remember joining all the pennies and joining all the 5, 10 cents all the way around the lock to raise money.
Yeah.
I've never heard of Kaylee Cushlocka.
I know, you have to go to confession over the weekend after hearing that.
You're there how many years?
Neil was out with us a good few years back now, maybe. So he has to brush off his dancing shoes as well. We're here 26 years now, we're out there actually. Yeah, in the year 2000 it started. And it was kind of small, I suppose, at the beginning. And so it grew. And we have huge numbers. And next month now, July is always the biggest month. For the 5 weeks in July, we always have just a huge crowd altogether. They come from all over the world, actually.
And what are we talking about, Kaylee, now? You're not talking Riverdance. Are we talking like the Walls of Limerick or the Siege of Venice or something?
Walls of Limerick, Siege of Venice, Shoe the Donkey, all them simple little ones. And we demonstrate everything, of course, first, and then we just dance it out. And it's not very energetic, no, because we have to give people a chance, you know?
Mm. I've got a great video. Just shortly after Christmas, we went to the West Gaeltacht and Dingle, over the hill and into Dunquin and into Cruger Cavanaugh just for refreshment, shall we say. And unusually for Cruger's, they had music on. Apparently they do every Christmas. It was two guys, one guy on a squeeze box, one on a guitar. They were as good as Cooney and Begley. They were like the Guns N' Roses of Irish trad. But the number of people, a number of fours dancing around with this fantastic music playing, it really is, it's kind of when you go back to the Gaeltacht that you see, you know, I'm missing a lot of this. And it's nice to see that some of it's going on in Cork.
It is lovely. And, you know, a lot of us would have maybe back in the day maybe learned a few steps in school. And it's amazing how it just comes back to people. But even people that from other countries come and they never saw anything like this, they just all get involved, young and old. Like, I mean, last night, we had people, there was people in their 80s dancing with, like, little children, like 5 and 6 and 7 years old, you know, and it's great. It is the greatest. It's only there for an hour and a half, and it's a lovely little kind of evening, you know what I mean? As I say, weather permitting, when the weather's good, and people come and just sit, they bring seats and they fold out their seats and sit just to watch the going is on, you know, and they get involved in the atmosphere there and enjoy the music if they're not able to dance.
Is it a tourist attraction?
Huge, with huge numbers, unbelievable numbers, yeah.
And it's on every Wednesday night. It's free to attend, of course. Free to attend.
Free open air, yep.
Starting at what time?
Free. 7:30 until 9:00.
Brilliant stuff. Well, hopefully you have a bigger crowd next Wednesday now. There probably won't be anything competing. A lot of your clients might have went to Alanis Morissette down the road last night. And of course, you're going to get less when there's traffic congestion and all that around gigs as well, aren't you?
Well, there is, of course, and people probably couldn't make it. And then, of course, some of the primary schools finished up today, and I suppose last night before the last day of school, we still had a nice crowd. I mean, I suppose we definitely had 60 people anyway, I suppose, you know what I mean? It's small for Kaylee, but I suppose another people think that's a nice number, and it was a lovely number, and we all danced around, and it was kind of warm. We were taking little breaks every now and then because the heat was there, of course.
Okay.
But as I say, we're in the shade, and it is lovely, and we want everyone to come out. Whether you can dance or not, just come along and bring someone with you, and if you have any family visiting or anything, sure, bring them along for...
It's great to have all these little quirky things around the place. We're going to be talking to another quirky idea that's taken force. You know, the coastal saunas in a few minutes' time. But this sort of a quirky thing, Kaylee Cushlocka returned with force last Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. if you want to turn up next Wednesday. As always, weather permitting. But dances are demonstrated there. You know, you can learn and start to dance badly if you want.
Do kind of course. And we'd love to see all you all there. And
you're a star.
Off the dancing shoes. You're a star. Thank you.
Thanks a mil. Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Now, just before we go to our next item, I meant to address this during the week, but about a week ago, there's a little rant here, okay? About a week ago, an elderly relative of mine, and I was in their company, tried to turn on their mobile phone. And the mobile phone, for whatever reason, would not switch on without a PIN number. Now, this elderly relation doesn't have, you know, the capacity, let's say, to remember numbers. So it was set up by his family as not having any sort of pass. I know there are security implications behind that, but he does look after the phone. But no way could either of us get it switched on. I asked him, did he input a number into the phone? No. But there it was, a GOMO SIM and no way to access the phone. So we tried numbers that it might have been. We tried four zeros. We tried a birthday. We tried an address number a couple of times. And eventually the phone is telling me, who's trying to deal with it technologically, that you now have five chances left, four, three, and then down to two chances. So then I went on to customer support. And now I'm interacting with AI for 45 minutes before eventually there opens up an option to speak to a representative, to speak to a human being. And eventually, I didn't even get to speak to a human being, but I knew I was interacting with a human being because you just know when they're not standard copy and paste questions coming in from AI. And the simple solution, and this might help people if you're locked out of your phone, you have to have the PUC number. But this human being, Brian, asked me, do you have the PUC number? I said, well, we've had trouble before, so yes, I have a copy of the PUC, P-U-K code, photographed on my phone. Okay, this is what he said. Crash the phone. How do you mean? Says I. Crash the phone. Use two more PIN numbers to get in, and then it'll completely lock the phone. So I said, what good will that do me? He said, you can then use the PUC number and open the phone, and you can then input any PIN number that you wish, four zeros or whatever works for the person. So that proved to be the good advice. So I crashed the phone and input the PUC number, and then it was mandatory to put in another. Now, I know probably in the phone settings, again, we can revert it to a no PIN. So the phone is working now, albeit under a PIN. But it got me to thinking, when a society forces a near 90-year-old person, number one, to use a smartphone in order to access basic rights, I don't think that's a modern society. And I'm wondering, is it a society that's decided to cast aside its own elders? Because there is no way this person could navigate what I spent an hour doing in order. The phone is off for life unless there is younger help or more able help to assist. But everything has become an app at the moment. Everything is a code. Everything is a one-time password. Everything is a portal. And I just worry for the people who built this country with their own hands. Now often find themselves, I don't know what the right word is, illiterate, technologically illiterate in their own homes. If you know, if you're booking a medical appointment or paying a bill, and if that needs the help of a son or a grandchild, a granddaughter, a grandson, and that's assuming there is one for the older person, that's not a system that's worked. That's a system that's failed. It's not innovation. It's more exclusion than technological innovation. The technology should serve people. Not determine who's entitled to dignity. And I know I'm ranting on here now, but I just feel we, you know, bit by bit, we're leaving behind those who came before us. And that's not evolving. It's making us more comfortable, if nothing else, maybe more selfish. So just be aware of the old people who may have technological difficulties, and watch when bills come through the door and maybe they forget and then they get the wazzer, the strict you must pay or else we'll send the collectors sort of stuff. Often it isn't their fault and not in their memory. Okay, rant over. Now, it's made the press this week that vendors and sauna operators are to incur €1,400 licence fees to trade at several Cork beaches. Now, this fee is helping to fund two community wardens to enforce litter rules and help provide more toilets. All rosy in the garden. Or is it, John? Good morning.
Hi, Mike. John here. How are you doing?
Good. Now, you're from Coastal Cabin. Tell me about Coastal Cabin.
Coastal Cabin, we're located at Garryvaugh on the beach, right in front of the Garryvaugh Hotel, in the Coastal Car Park. We operate two saunas, both can seat 14 people. And we've been there 3 years. To be fair, the council have been very, very reasonable and fair with us. They've allowed us to put our saunas in, and they've given us, a small help, open barriers for certain things that we needed to get in and out. I've always been asking them, can I get permits? And my view is, make that if I get a permit, it legitimizes the business. I'm not operating there looking over my shoulder, wondering if somebody's going to ask me to leave.
So you're looking for a permit or to pay what was, I'm not sure what they call them these days. In my day, they were called hawker's licenses.
Yes, the same thing. Exactly the same, Mike. It is, yeah. A hawker's license is just giving you permission, official permission, to be there and trade. So they've come up with this fee of 1,400. I'm very happy to pay it, Michael, to be honest. It makes me 100% legitimate. And it just means, look, like everything nowadays, you just have to pass the fee, the extra cost on to the customer. And I think people can accept that now in every
everything has been passed on to the customer. That's the problem.
It's just been hammered, That is the problem.
But do you need, because you're in the area, not me, do we need community wardens to enforce litter rules around Garryvaugh?
Look, Gary Vaughan's lucky. It's a very, very, it's a beautiful beach, very well kept. The public toilets, the whole is exceptionally clean. And there's a great community down there as well of people that care very much about their beach. Wardens, I'm not sure. Putting showers on beaches, more public amenities would be a great help. In our beaches.
We mentioned a different beach earlier on in relation to ice cream and the hot weather and Tony Bell ices and all that. One of the most popular beaches in Cork is the Dock Beach in Kinsale, and it has no public toilet facilities. And I'm not sure which authority, is it the local authority or whatever, needs to address that, but there are literally 1,000 people on the beach every day with nowhere to use a loo.
It's fairly bad, yeah.
So you can imagine what they're doing, most of them.
Yeah, a big ocean. Listen to me, Mike, we do some great events starting now this July that people might be interested in. We're doing full moon nights. You can come down and swim in the dark under the full moon, fire pit s'mores, lovely events, always booked out. And we're doing a fire show. We've an artist coming from Dublin who's going to do a fire show on the beach on the 4th of July. So you'll have a sauna and a swim for an hour, and then the sky will do this wild show on the beach to sit down.
Do you have a nighttime lifeguard and all that for health and safety, yeah?
Two of our staff are lifeguards, and I have done lifeguard course in the past, but it's not up to date. But to be honest, Mike, with the sauna and sea swimming, you're really only going into the sea for a dip. Very few people swim. They just go in and have a dip. And at night time when we're doing it, generally what we find is that the whole 24 people go in together.
It's a natural plunge pool, really.
That's a huge plunge pool in front of us. Nobody swims at night. We prefer if they don't.
If I was to give you 30 seconds... Give me the benefits of a sauna. Because, when you compare a sauna to a steam room, if you put an apple in a sauna for a day, it'll be a shriveled core. If you put an apple in a steam room for a day, it's going to be healthy and glistening. What are the benefits of a sauna?
Sauna, right? Sauna detoxifies your body. Neurosurgeons all over the world are now screaming at people, please get into saunas. They will prevent, there's a 65% better chance of not developing dementia if you use a sauna twice a week and with a cold plunge. It could be a sauna in a hotel and use a cold shower outside it. The benefits of this to your body are enormous. Both the heart, brain function, longevity. Longevity. And all young people now, I mean, the bulk of my customers are 20 to 40-year-olds. They're all, and when you do it, Mike, you fall in love with it. It's a really, really fun event. And I've made friends, we've had chats, better than any pub inside in the sauna. It is the new pub.
Okay.
Get down there, have you not tried it?
Oh, I'm in a sauna once a week, but not on a beach. I've never tried a beach one.
Listen, get down to me. Come down and try it. You'll be there's no comparison. Like, I was a member in Leisure Club all my life. My background is hospitality, Mike. I used to run hotels for years.
Okay.
And I've given it all up on doing this full time.
The only problem, John, is if I togged off with the sauna, the Japanese whaling fleet would be on the horizon. The Nishan Maru would be in. John, great to talk to you. Coastal Cabin.
Meet your twin.
You'd normally assume that someone is coming on here to castigate the charges. Now, I know people will, and we don't have time to do it today, but people can castigate the charges if they wish, because your counterparts in Kerry are only paying 250 for a year, and you're being asked to pay 1,400.
That's 1,400 is a lot, to be fair. It is a large sum of money. But maybe if the money was used for better facilities and showers and toilets on beaches, I'd be quite happy to contribute to that.
Yeah, Emer, and also, Emer is heading down with Viv to one of
full
your
moon night.
Full moon nights.
I
won't give you any warnings in that regard, but I'll just say, now there's a right couple of handy dockets.
Yeah.
Good luck, John.
Take care, Mike.
Lines are open now if you want to go to the Camogie that we mentioned, and that's happening in Parky Rin, and, of course, our family pass for Blarney Castle and all that that involves. So we'll open the lines on 0818 104 106. My thanks to the Neil Prendeville Show production team, Emer O'Hay-Martin, Vivian McCarthy and Seamus Whelan. And we're back tomorrow for my final one before Neil returns on Monday morning. Back tomorrow morning after 9.